That late-born prodigy doesn't get chosen for the All-Star team as an 8-year-old because he's too small. So he doesn't get the extra practice. And without that extra practice, he has no chance at hitting 10,000 hours by the time the professional hockey teams start looking for players. And without 10,000 hours under his belt, there is no way he can ever master the skills necessary to play the top level. Even Mozart, the greatest musical prodigy of all time, couldn't hit his stride until he had his 10,000 hours in. Practice isn't the thing you do once you're good. It's the thing you do that makes you good. The other interesting thing about that 10,000 hours number, of course, is that 10,000 hours is an enormous amount of time. It's all but impossible to reach that number by the time you're a young adult all by yourself. You have to have parents who encourage and support you. You can't be poor because if you have to hold down a part-time job on the side to help make ends meet, there won't be enough time left over in the day to practice. In fact, most people can only really reach that number if they get into some kind of special program, like a hockey all-star squad, or they get some kind of extraordinary opportunity that gives them a chance to put in those hours. So, back to Bill Joy. It's 1971. He's tall and gawky and 16 years old. He's the math whiz, the kind of student at schools like MIT or Caltech or the University of Waterloo attract by the hundreds. When Bill was a little boy, he wanted to know everything about everything way before he should have even known what he wanted to know, his father William says. We answered him when we could, and when we couldn't, we would just give him a book. When it came time to apply to college, Joy got a perfect score on the math portion of the Scholastic Aptitude Test. It wasn't particularly hard, he says, matter-of-factly. There was plenty of time to check it twice. He has talent by the truckload, but that's not the only consideration. It never is. The key to his development is that he stumbled across that nondescript building on Beale Avenue. In the early 1970s, when Joy was learning about programming, computers were the size of rooms. A single machine, which might have less power and memory than your microwave now has, could cost upwards of $1 million. And that's in 1970s dollars. Computers were rare. If you found them, they were hard to get access to. And if you managed to get access, renting time on them cost a fortune. What's more, programming itself was extraordinarily tedious. This was the era when computer programs were created using cardboard punch cards. Each line of code was imprinted on the card using a key punch machine. A complex program might include hundreds, if not thousands, of these cards in tall stacks. Once a program was ready, you walked over to whatever mainframe computer you had access to and gave the stack of cards to an operator. Since computers could only handle one task at a time, the operator made an appointment for your program, and depending how many people were ahead of you in line, you might not get your cards back for a few hours or even a day. And if you made even a single error, even a typographical error in your program, you had to take the cards back, track down the error, and begin the whole process again. Under those circumstances, it was exceedingly difficult for anyone to become a programming expert. Certainly becoming an expert by your early 20s was all but impossible. When you can only program for a few minutes out of every hour you spend in the computer room, how can you ever get to 10,000 hours of practice? Programming with cards, one computer scientist from that era remembers, did not teach you programming. It taught you patience and proofreading. It wasn't until the mid-1960s that a solution to the programming problem emerged. Computers were finally powerful enough that they could handle more than one appointment at once. If you rewrote the computer's operating system, computer scientists realized, the machine's time could be shared. It could be trained to handle hundreds of tasks at the same time. That, in turn, meant that programmers didn't have to physically hand their stack of computer cards to the operator anymore. You could build dozens of terminals, link them all to the mainframe by a telephone line, and have everyone working online all at once.